Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's ruling by the Supreme Court upholding Texas's discriminatory election maps in another blow to the Voting Rights Act. Justin Levitt, a professor of law at Loyola University School of Law in Los Angeles, joins us to discuss how the court's newest justice, Neil Gorsuch, appears intent on killing off the Voting Rights Act entirely, making a mockery of assurances given by Chief Justice Roberts 5 years ago that other parts of the Act would still protect minority voters after he gutted Section 5 of the Act requiring pre-clearance by the Justice Department of changes to voting laws in states with a history of discrimination. But given today's 5-4 ruling, the future voting rights for minorities looks increasingly grim, because without the only likely swing vote of Justice Kennedy, who might retire soon, if Trump were to appoint another justice like Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, then suppression of minority voting rights in this country would get dramatically worse. And although Gorsuch tried to dress up his opinion in arcane legalese, the intention of the ruling appears to be grounded in raw partisan politics. Then, after saying in a series of angry tweets between golf games on Sunday and President Trump's day job at the White House today that, quote, we cannot allow these people to invade our country and that we must bring them back from where they came, we will speak with Lindsay Nash, who helped establish the nation's first system of institutionally provided counsel for detained non-citizens facing deportation. A clinical professor in the Immigration Justice Clinic at the Cardozo School of Law, she joins us to discuss how, after appearing to show compassion for children separated from their parents, Trump is doubling down, blaming Democrats, vilifying immigrants, and calling for even harsher treatment at the border by taking away immigrants' constitutional rights to due process. Then finally, following Erdogan's victory in yesterday's election, helped by his control of the press and the state of emergency he has imposed, we'll examine how autocrats like Erdogan, Maduro, and Putin are using the trappings of democracy to claim legitimacy while undermining democracy. Daniel Ziblatt, a professor of government at Harvard University, whose latest book is How Democracies Die, joins us to discuss how our president appears more comfortable with autocrats and, as Trump deliberately stokes the partisan divide to further polarize the country, the Democrats are being drawn into the trap of lowering the rhetoric to Trump's level. And joining us now is Justin Levitt, who is Associate Dean for Research and a Professor of Law at Loyola University Law School in Los Angeles. He is an expert on election law who focuses particularly on election administration and redistricting, and his work has been cited extensively in the media and in the courts, including by the United States Supreme Court. Welcome to Background Briefing, Justin Levitt.
Thanks very much, Ian.
And the vote, the 5-4 decision that came out of the Supreme Court today in Abbott versus Perez, is widely considered to be a blow to voting rights, and particularly is likely to enable the suppression of minority votes. And many people think that this is about to get worse, given how it appears that the new Justice Gorsuch has joined, particularly with Clarence Thomas's views, which have often been considered to be somewhat on the fringes. So if Anthony Kennedy goes, things are likely to get worse?
Yes, this was definitely not a good sign today, and my work was not cited at any of the opinions today. I rather wish it had been, because that would have shown they'd have grappled with the problems a lot more seriously than they did. Justices Gorsuch and Thomas were particularly notable. They said, in a decision that was a pretty bad sign for voting rights all the way around, they said that the Voting Rights Act does not cover redistricting at all, period, full stop. That would come, I think, as a pretty big surprise to Congress, which for 40 years has reliably known that the court thinks it applies to redistricting, hasn't seen fit to correct the court's misimpression. It's a very strange approach to figuring out what a statute means. And they also signed on to the majority opinion. The majority of the court today, very tightly divided, 5-4, essentially took away a major tool for fighting intentional discrimination. They did that 5 years ago today in Shelby County, And now they've knocked another one off the list. They essentially said that when a jurisdiction intentionally discriminates, if it then puts a Band-Aid on the problem, there's no reason to look further to find out if the wound is actually much deeper. And that gives an unfortunate green light to jurisdictions that see a political or other incentive in intentionally discriminating. The worst that happens is a court will force them to tinker around the edges. But the court today said it's not necessary to rip out discrimination root and branch. And that's a pretty major departure from where they've been in the past.
And you mentioned Justin Levitt, Shelby County versus Holder, which was a ruling that came down 5 years ago. And Justice Roberts was fairly vocal in that, in the way that he sold that ruling. He suggested that just by getting rid of Section 5, the requirement for preclearance with states with a history of racial discrimination in voting and Dred Scott type activity. But he went on to assure everybody that all the other sections were intact, so people shouldn't worry, that we're sufficiently mature now as a nation and post-racial that we don't need Section 5. Well, isn't today's ruling, doesn't that put a lie to that?
It definitely does. I'll say I also, after that ruling, there were hearings in Congress about whether to update the Voting Rights Act, whether to move forward. And I sat next to a gentleman who said, don't worry. The Supreme Court may have taken one potential option off the table, but there's rapid relief available for people who feel like they've been discriminated against. People will be able to go into court, and they'll be able to get a quick decision to undo it, so we don't need to take more affirmative steps. The voters in Texas are now sitting on year 8 of fighting for equitable representation, fighting for representation that does not represent an intentional effort to discriminate against them. The case actually is still ongoing. There's another very small window of hope for these plaintiffs left, but that's going to be another year or two in the fight if it comes at all. And so really, up until now, at least people have known that if the government discriminates against them intentionally, if it does the thing that we have judged to be the worst malfeasance, using state power to take action against people because of their race, because of their ethnicity, until now, it's at least been confident that courts will make them not only tinker around the edges, but undo the heart of that intentional discrimination, again, cut it out root and branch. And today's opinion has a court sitting in a very different place saying, you know what, Band-Aids are going to be enough. That's deeply disappointing.
And again, I'm speaking with Justin Levitt, who is an Associate Dean for Research and a Professor of Law at Loyola University's Law School in Los Angeles. He's an expert on election law who focuses particularly on election administration and redistricting. His work has been cited extensively in the media and in the courts, including by the United States Supreme Court. And we're talking about the 5-4 decision today. That is a blow to voting rights in this country. And at what point, though, does these voting restrictions bump up against the 14th Amendment in terms of equal protection?
Well, we thought that was part of today. So part of the claims were not just that the Voting Rights Act stopped what Texas did, but that Texas intentionally set out to discriminate against people because of their race. And that's the core. That's the heart of the 14th Amendment. That's why it was enacted years after the Civil War. And the court said, essentially, intentional discrimination is a problem, but if you fix it a little bit, that's enough. So in this particular case, the problem stems from lines that Texas drew in 2011. Those were intentionally discriminatory. They got sued, and they came into court and compromised. They made it better, but they didn't fix all of the problems. The compromise was put in place because the 2012 elections were coming, and you had to have some lines to know where to elect people from. The court essentially ruled on that 2012 compromise today, and they said good enough. And some of the claims were under the Constitution. Texas was accused of essentially engaging in some of the most pernicious conduct there is. And it's not the first time either. It's also not the time the Supreme Court has had to deal with this. So for the last four or five redistricting cycles, for decades, Texas has had a real problem with drawing district lines on the basis of race in ways that are unconstitutional. In the last decade, in 2003, Texas redrew the lines. It replaced valid lines with lines that it preferred. It actually was an enormous scandal. Some of the legislators fled the state twice in order to deprive the legislature of a quorum. That's how strongly they felt about it. And the court came back and said in 2006, what you've done here bears the mark of intentional discrimination. Texas turned around and did the same thing to the same district in 2011. It can't help itself. It is what we would call in other circumstances a repeat offender. But apparently the court took an etch-a-sketch to that history today and essentially wiped the slate clean. There are still possible options for repairing the damage. There is one narrow window left, including a window to put Texas back under federal supervision, by the way. And ultimately, this may come down to the voters having to overcome a pretty strong seawall that Texas put in place. It is not insurmountable, but it's pretty significant.
And that definitely puts the wind in the face of Beto O'Rourke running against Ted Cruz as opposed to the wind at his back, Ryan.
Well, that, fortunately, is a statewide election.
Right.
And so the district lines aren't going to matter much for that. The lines that matter are the lines of the state. And that's going to be one opportunity for people to speak out, for sure. But I don't want to give the impression that statewide elections are the only ones that matter. We tend to focus on the president. We tend to focus on U.S. senators or governors. The legislators, the people that we expect to represent us most closely in the original framers' design, the people who were supposed to most closely represent the people, and that's local, state, and federal government, are tremendously important. And it's in those elections that the district lines matter the most. Now, there are a number of different states that have taken steps to get rid of the problem that's really at the heart of this case, which is legislators drawing their own district lines, either drawing the lines for the districts they are in or drawing the lines for the districts they want to be in. There's a real sort of nitty-gritty conflict of interest at the heart of that, where people who perceive advantage, political advantage, will draw lines in their personal interest or in their partisan interest and forget about the public interest. And in places like Texas or in North Carolina or in Florida or other places where there's been some serious tampering, that's also often bound up in race as well. A few states, and increasingly many, there are a bunch of states that are moving in this direction this fall, have decided to take the pen out of the hands of legislators with the most personal stake in the issue. And you find that takes the gas out of the process just a little bit. That's not the only solution. It's a solution that California has actually has made. It's a decision California made in 2010 and I think feels pretty happy about. It's a decision that a lot of other states are making too.
Well, just in closing though, Justin Levitt, what are the intellectual justifications that the Gorsuches of this world and the Roberts too, because after all, he assured us back 5 years ago with Shelby versus Holder that they weren't doing anything radical, and now they've really tipped their hand and showed that what their real intentions are. It's hard not to see these people as being partisan. So what kind of intellectual dressing did they give to this, what seems to be the raw partisan political move?
The intellectual dressing depends on the intervention of a court. So recall, Texas drew lines in 2011 that were discriminatory. By 2012, they had to come up with a compromise because the elections were going forward. Two courts refused to let them implement the districts they originally wanted. So the people who had sued Texas in Texas got together and put up a compromise. And the court said, I'll sign off on this for now. I'm not making a decision about whether these lines are okay in the abstract, but we need to have lines somewhere. These seem good enough for the moment, so I will bless them for this coming election in 2012. Texas then turned around and in 2013 enacted as a statute the compromise. It said, okay, we've got new maps. We're just going to make those maps the same that the federal court just blessed a second ago. Despite the fact that the federal court said, I'm not blessing these are good enough for now, but I'll give you a final answer later. The Supreme Court said what Texas did in 2013 was just following what a federal court had done. And so that's really good enough, that Texas couldn't have intended to discriminate in 2013 when all it was doing was enacting the very same lines that a federal court had put in place the year before. If you have only 10 minutes of operative short-term memory, that can seem like a logical decision. If you're living in the movie Memento, that might seem plausible. But it completely discounts Texas's past, Texas's quite disturbing past, and not ancient past, 2011 past. And it refuses to acknowledge the incentives for the future. And so if you've only got a frame that lasts 10 minutes, the decision might seem quite reasonable. But voters have to live in a frame that lasts longer than that.
Well, Justin Levitt, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much.
And again, I've been speaking with Justin Levitt, who's an Associate Dean for Research and a Professor of Law at Loyola University's Law School in Los Angeles. He's an expert on election law who focuses particularly on election administration and redistricting. And his work has been cited extensively in the media and in the courts, including by the United States Supreme Court. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into how Trump is doubling down, blaming Democrats, vilifying immigrants, and calling for even harsher treatment at the border by taking away immigrants' constitutional rights to due process.